Unit 2. Part 1. Crime and Punishment. Like many other countries, Britain has experienced a great increase in criminal activity of nearly every kind. Nearly five times as many acts of violence were reported to the police in 1997 as 20 years before. Although most burglars are not caught, those who are caught overload the courts and prisons. Although the courts try, in theory at least, to use probation, community service, and other devices to avoid sentencing people to prison, the 50,000 people in prison are more, in proportion to the population, than in any other Western European countries. Vast sums are being spent on building new prisons, but the prisons are still overcrowded, and the humiliation suffered by the inmates makes rehabilitation difficult. Many prisoners are released early on parole. The prisons in England are run by the Home Office, though each prison has a local board of visitors who make reports about conditions and also deal with serious bad behavior. Normally, prisoners are released after serving two-thirds or less of the time for which they were sentenced. But an offense in prison may be punished by the loss of some days of remission. There are several kinds of prisons, including open ones, and ones prisoners go out to work in groups outside. Prisoners who want to study for examinations are helped to do so, and there are training courses in prison. But in practice, some spend very little time outside their cells. 1. Which of the following is true about Britain in recent years? 2. In Britain, around how many people are held in prisons? 3. Which of the following is in charge of the prisons in England? 4. Generally, what is this passage about? Part 2. A Crime Survey. Most crime is committed by young males, is opportunist. It is not planned by hardened professional criminals, although these do exist. Crime tends to be concentrated in large cities and urban areas. About 94% of offenses recorded by the police in England and Wales are directed against property, but only 5% involve violence. Rising affluence has provided more opportunities for casual property crime. In 1997, for example, car crime was only 1/10 of total crime, but this has risen to about 28%. The demand for and supply of illegal drugs has been an increasing factor in the incidence of crime in recent years. Regular crime surveys are undertaken in England and Wales, Scotland, and in Northern Ireland. The 1999 survey in England and Wales asked respondents for information about how crime had affected them in 1998. It estimated a total of 15 million crimes in 1998, the majority of which were against property. Violent crime accounted for only 5% of the total, while 36% involved vehicles, 9% were burglaries, and 30% other forms of theft. These surveys, the fifth of which is in progress, indicate that many crimes go unrecorded by the police, mainly because not all victims report them.
Part 3. A radio interview about a robbery.
Here is the local news. More details are emerging of yesterday's raid on the City Center branch of the Northern Bank. A spokesman for the bank said earlier today that a total of 5,500 pounds in banknotes and traveler's checks had been stolen. None of the bank staff were injured, but two cashiers and a member of the public had been treated for shock after the incident, which occurred just before closing time yesterday afternoon. Police have spent the day interviewing eyewitnesses and piecing together information they have received via a special telephone hotline. We'll be giving you that number again later in the program. Here to tell us more about the inquiry, though, is Inspector Tom Wells of Wessex CID. Hello, Inspector.
Hello.
This seems to have been quite a daring raid, doesn't it?
Yes, indeed. The robbers drove up to the bank in broad daylight and parked right outside.
Do we know what kind of car they were driving?
Yes, we know they were in a blue Ford van. And thanks to a very sharp-eyed witness, we know that the registration number was BMV593, with either an A or an H at the end. And I'd like to ask your viewers to keep an eye open for that vehicle and let us know if they see it. It's probably been abandoned somewhere by now.
What else can you tell us at this stage?
Well, one man entered the bank at about 3:20, leaving the other at the wheel of the van. He must have put on a mask to hide his face when he was just inside the door. He then produced a sawn-off shotgun and made the three customers who were in the bank at the time lie on the floor before demanding money from the cashiers.
Do you know if it was a real gun?
He didn't actually fire the gun, of course, thank goodness, but we're pretty sure it was a real gun, and there's no reason to believe it wasn't loaded. The manager, who was in his office, saw what was happening and pressed the alarm bell. He then came out to help his staff to pack the money into a bag. The gunman gagged him and tied him to a chair afterwards, but he didn't actually injure him. While that was happening, a customer managed to run out of the bank and call for help. But, unfortunately, the robber was able to grab the bag and make his escape before the police arrived on the scene. But he did drop a scarf he was wearing on the pavement as he escaped, and that may give us some clues.
But thankfully, there were no injuries. I believe you've issued a description of a man police would like to interview in connection with the robbery, haven't you?
That's right, yes. We've had a couple of pretty good descriptions of the man who entered the bank, and we now also have an artist impression of him. He's described as in his mid-30s, and of medium height. He's got shoulder-length, sandy-colored hair, quite wavy, and a pale, rather unhealthy-looking complexion. He was wearing an earring in one ear, and several witnesses reported seeing a sticker plastered on his face, so we believe he may have a cut of some kind on his left cheek.
Well, that sounds like a useful description. Do you know what he was wearing?
Yes. He was wearing a kind of light-colored ski-type jacket and dirty jeans with a tear in one of the knees. And he had sports shoes on. Oh, one other thing. The bank's security camera shows him holding his gun in his left hand, suggesting that he may be left-handed.
So, if you see this man, what should the viewers do, Inspector?
Well, don't approach him. We believe he may be dangerous. If you see him, telephone the hotline on 574-301 or call your local police station.
Thank you, Inspector Tom Wells. That number again is 574-301 if you have any information that you think would help the police. And on to the rest of the day's news.
1. When did the raid on the bank branch occur?
2. How much money was stolen?
3. How many people were injured during the raid?
4. What could possibly be the registration number of the robbers' van.
5. How many robbers were involved in the raid?
6. What did one robber drop when he made his escape? Part 4. Burglary Prevention. You've all heard by now that last week, in the middle of the afternoon, someone broke into the Johnson's house down the street and took just about everything. Stereo, TV, silver, jewelry, money, you name it. Now, it's true that there's been very little crime around here lately, so most of you probably aren't doing anything to prevent it. That's why burglars were able to get in and out of the Johnson's house so easily. I want to give you folks some simple suggestions that will make it harder for burglars to break in the future. First, let's talk about lighting. I'm sure many of you are already doing this, but I want to remind you to turn on your outside lights at night. Not just the porch lights in front, but also the backyard lights. This is important because sometimes criminals jump over a back fence and enter through a back door. Inside the house, it's a good idea to put automatic timers on lights, so that even if you're out for the evening, your lights will come on automatically, and it will look like someone is home. If you live in an apartment building, make sure there's good lighting in the garage and hallways. You should report broken lights to your landlord immediately. Now about locks. First of all, cheap locks on doors are not safe. Your doors should have deadbolt at least 1 inch thick. You can also buy special locks to put on your windows. That way you can't open the window without a special key. It might be inconvenient for you, but it will also make it very hard for a burglar to come in through the window. By the way, that's how they broke into the Johnson's house. And of course, always lock your doors and windows, even when you leave for just a minute. Did you know that in half the burglaries, the burglars break in through unlocked doors and windows? It's hard to believe, isn't it? My next suggestion is, don't keep valuable jewelry or large amounts of cash in the house. Put them in the bank where they'll be safe. Your other valuables, like televisions, stereos, and cameras, should have special identifying marks on them. Write your driver's license or passport number on these items, so that later the police can identify them and return them to you. Now let's look at what you, as a neighborhood watch group, can do. First, get to know each other. A good neighbor is your best protection. When you go on vacation, ask someone to collect your mail and to keep an eye on your house. Stop newspaper or other deliveries while you're away. Keep your eyes and ears open for unusual activities, such as strange vans or trucks in your neighbor's driveway, people carrying furniture, and so on. If you think a burglary is going on, don't try to stop it. Just call the police. And one more thing. Each of you should put the neighborhood watch decal, you know, the picture of the man in a coat looking over his shoulder, in your front window. That tells the burglar that this neighborhood has a neighborhood watch and that someone might be watching him. I want to tell you, starting this neighborhood watch is a real smart idea. We know that areas with neighborhood watches have less crime than areas without them. The reason is simple. A burglar wants to get in and out fast. If he knows that you have made an effort to protect your home and that somebody might be watching for him, he'll just go somewhere else. So you folks are off to a good start here. Part 5. What happened during the night? First interview.
Mr. Johnson, I understand you were a security man at the factory on duty on the night of the robbery. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you could tell us what actually happened.
Well, everything was quite normal. It must have been about 10 o'clock, I suppose. Well, I normally take about 10 minutes to walk around the factory site, you know.
Hmm.
And I was just going past where the paint shop's quite close to the fence. I was surprised to see that that part of the fence was hanging loose from a post, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I made a mental note to write about it in my nightly report when I got back to my office. The office is on the other side of the site from there, you know.
I see.
Near the main entrance. You see, I still had to walk all round the main factory complex and through the machine shop area.
Can you describe to us how you chased the thief?
Well, I'd done my round of that half of the site.
Mm-hmm.
And I just turned into the road between the assembly shops when I saw a man in a black coat come out of the assembly shop on the left. Well, that's number two assembly shop. So I shouted to him to stop. He turned left and disappeared from view. And when I reached the end of the road and looked round the corner, I could see him running past the canteen quite fast.
And did he stop?
No. He just ran off between the machine shops and the paint shop. And out of sight.
Mm.
So I naturally started to run after him. And when I got to the corner, I could see he was running back to the hole in the fence I'd seen. So I ran after him. Well, just as he was getting through the hole in the fence, I managed to catch hold of his leg. He was strong, though. I'd say he was about, 25 years old. He kicked me on the side of the head, and I fell down on the floor. I don't remember anything else.
Did he knock you out, then?
I suppose he must have done, because when I woke up, Miss Jones was standing over me.
And did the thief get away with anything of value?
I can't really say. There was a black bag next to the fence with some computer tapes in it. I suppose that's what the thief must have been trying to steal. 1. Who was Mr. Johnson?
2. What was he doing when the robbery took place?
3. When did the robbery take place, according to Mr. Johnson?
4. What did he notice when he came near the paint shop?
5. What happened to him when he was chasing the thief?
6. What did the thief try to steal, according to Mr. Johnson?
Second interview.
Now, Mr. Bakewell, what exactly do you do in the factory?
Well, I'm a trainee production manager.
I see. Now, how did you come to be in the factory on that evening, the evening of the robbery?
Well, it sounds a bit silly, but I just come back to get a report. Well, I needed it for a conference the next day.
What time would that be?
Well, it must have been about 8 o'clock.
Good. Now, where do you work?
Well, I've got a small office in number 2 assembly shop. Just over there, actually.
So getting back to the time, you were in the building when the robbery took place?
Oh, no. No, I'd left by then.
I see. Well, what did you do?
Well, you see, the lights were out in the assembly shop, and so when I closed the door to my office, I can't remember if it was locked or not. I mean, you see, normally the door closes automatically.
Oh, right. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Bakewell.
Thank you. Third interview. And your name's Joanna Ripley. That's R-I-P-L-E-Y. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Right. Now, could you tell me what you were doing at the time of the robbery?
Well, I was on night shift, you see. I'm a computer operator, and we're on duty until 12 o'clock on the night shift.
Mm-hmm.
I always go down for a coffee with Miss Jones. We work together in the computer center. We go down about 9:30 usually.
Yeah,
And, we go down and get our coffee from the coffee machine in the entrance hall to the canteen. To the left of that office block.
Right. And did you see anything unusual?
Well, we were on our way over to the canteen, and, well, there was a man near the paint shop.
Did you know him? Did you recognize him?
No, not really. You see, it was raining quite a bit, so we just hurried over to the canteen, not to get wet.
Mm-hmm. And what happened then?
Well, we were just coming out of the canteen. Oh, I suppose about 10 minutes or so later. And I heard somebody shout, "Stop!" And then I saw Mr. Johnson from security running down the road between the paint shop and the machine shops, you see.
Sure, yeah.
And, well, I think you know the rest. After a few minutes, there was such a loud shout from Mr. Johnson that, well, Miss Jones and I obviously knew something had happened, so we went and looked.
Ah, that was very brave of you.
No, you don't think in situations, do you? I mean, we just found Mr. Johnson lying on the ground.
So did you see the thief, then?
No, no sign of him at all.
Ah, I see.
I went to ring the ambulance, obviously, and the police, and Miss Jones went and gave Mr. Johnson a bit of first aid.
Fine. Thank you, Miss Ripley. That's fine. Thank you.
That's all right.
Part 6. Listening and Translation. 1. Sentence Translation.
1. I hate to ask you this, but do you think you could possibly stay on and send this email for me?
2. Excuse me, could I ask for some advice on overseas payments? Which would you say is the safest method of payment if you are selling abroad?
3. Dealers predict that the Japanese currency is expected to remain strong with expanded trade surplus.
4. Ranked the 17th largest in the world, the company is a leading supporter of the development of healthcare in this Asian country.
5. The foreign minister said that the two countries reached consensus on many international and regional issues, and that they would continue to exchange notes on these issues.
2. Passage Translation.
1. I was riding a motorcycle in Bali, in Indonesia, and got hopelessly lost. And it was teeming with rain, and I was very depressed and trying to find my way out. And through my pronunciation of the name of a certain town, I got given directions to the wrong side of the island, because I was pronouncing the town I actually wanted to be in wrongly, and people were quite genuinely thinking that they were giving me the right directions. And I ended up, 50 miles away from where I meant to be.
2. For most of her 87 years, Osceola McCarty has lived a quiet life in America's deep south, washing clothes and saving her pennies. But on Saturday, her date was President Bill Clinton. McCarty made the spotlight by donating her life savings of $50,000 to the University of Southern Mississippi for Black scholarships. Clinton read in the newspaper about Mrs. McCarty's gift and invited her to be his guest at Saturday night's Congressional Black Caucus Dinner in the White House, where the president presented her with the Presidential Citizens Medal, granted to Americans who perform exemplary deeds of service.